Hello once again, and welcome to SearchSecurity.com Security Wire Weekly for Wednesday, April 19th, 2006. I'm Eric Parazzo. This week, an interview with Information Security Magazine contributor Joel Snyder on the complexities of product testing. Plus, Microsoft says it will end security updates on some long-standing products. And should data theft be forgiven if nobody ever uses the data that gets stolen? But first, this week's top story. Firefox users are breathing a sigh of relief after Mozilla releases nearly two dozen patches. Late last week, Mozilla released an update for its popular open-source browser. The update corrects a number of security issues that could be exploited to bypass security restrictions, tamper with sensitive data, or conduct cross-site scripting and phishing attacks. Danish vulnerability clearinghouse Secunia rated the flaws as highly critical. To receive all the updates, Firefox users must update to browser versions 1.0.8 or 1.5.0.2. Also in the news, Microsoft announces the end of support for two of its operating systems, but what will the decision mean for security pros? Probably not much, experts say. The software giant announced that in mid-July it will end support and security updates for its Windows 98 and Windows Millennium Edition operating systems. Microsoft says the outdated products can expose users to security risks, and it recommends users upgrade to newer, more secure operating systems like Windows XP as soon as possible. However, analysts say that most organizations have had plans to upgrade, already have, and those that haven't probably won't until the hardware fails or until they can purchase new machines with new operating systems. Next, instant messaging and peer-to-peer threats are on the rise. That according to the latest research from IM vendor FaceTime Communications. The company recently conducted a survey on graynets, which is what it calls IM, P2P, and spyware programs installed on corporate machines without permission of IT departments. The data showed the number of security incidents related to graynets was up 723% in the first quarter of this year versus last year, and peer-to-peer attacks were 15 times more common this year versus the same period last year. Further complicating the problem, most IM and peer-to-peer applications are difficult to block because they are most often installed by end users and are tricky to spot. And this just into our newsroom, Oracle has released its quarterly security fixes, patching nearly three dozen different security issues. 13 of the fixes address issues with Oracle's database, while another 13 address issues specific to other Oracle applications. We'll have more on our site, searchsecurity.com, very shortly. Now this week's Security Spotlight segment. It's common for IT organizations to test out vendor products before making a purchase, but product testing is often much more complex than it seems. Joining us now to discuss the complicated world of product testing is Joel Snyder, senior partner with Opus One in Tucson, Arizona, and a product tester and contributing editor to Information Security Magazine. Joel, thanks so much for being with us today.
Well, thanks for the invitation.
I know it's early out there. Joel, in another publication you recently wrote about an incident you had with a vendor who was reluctant to let you test its product. What happened there in a nutshell?
Well, the product testing that I was going through ended up causing a lot of angst on the part of one of the vendors, and they came into the test bed after we'd already started testing and actually shut down their product. And there was a lot of anger and grief going back through there. But it was a real interesting example for me that the products don't necessarily speak for themselves nowadays, because really what we're looking at now is products as services. And so you really have to take into context the whole company and not just the product when you're buying security products nowadays. And it was not really a revelation, but something that's been changing and it's become a big focus nowadays.
Break that down for me. How does that really differ from product testing and what customer companies need to keep in mind from a few years past?
Sure, absolutely. Normally, you know, when you get a product, you're thinking about things like speeds and feeds. Will it handle my load? You know, does it have the right check boxes for me? You know, do I know how to manage it? Is it, you know, is it just going to basically meet my requirements? But what's happened is security products have evolved into services. I mean, we may think that we're not buying a managed outsourced service, but you know, almost every product nowadays, that's actually not the case. What we're really doing is jumping into a relationship, a long-term relationship with a vendor, because if for some reason that vendor goes under, or you have a relationship that sours, or something goes wrong, then you know, you don't have a product anymore. You've got a doorstop, and that's very hard to test. You know, as a tester, I really want to put my, you know, my Spirent box up against something and get out a number. But actually having to say, wow, you know, is this company someone I want to be with over the long term? That's much more difficult.
Now, obviously, vendors want to ensure that, you know, their products are being tested under real-world conditions, but creating real-world conditions isn't always an easy thing either. Tell me about the parameters of how you go about testing products. What are the key things that you do?
Well, we really believe in our lab in this real-world concept, and so we actually have a fairly large network which runs real traffic. That we can, within certain parameters, dump products into and see how they actually behave. You don't get reproducibility. You end up with a little bit of anecdotal results. But, you know, for the listener, right, all that really matters is how the product is going to behave in their network. So to me, it's like, well, you know, as long as I explain this is what my network is like, someone can say, okay, you know, this is what it would be like if it was in that network. You can use that kind of as an example to say, all right, well, I bring this product into my network. I really want to test it using my real-world, you know, speeds and feeds and applications and you know, the jacks and everything that might be related to the product. So I think that while there's a huge value in buying a piece of test gear that'll just kind of go around your product and give a performance number or a, you know, does this comply number or does it catch this attack if it's an IPS number, that's all secondary to, is it actually going to work for me? You know, and again, part of that is not just putting it in the network, but actually trying to work with the vendor and saying, all right, you know, does this vendor have a good reputation? You know, check out internet news groups. You know, am I getting good technical support? I'm fond of saying that if you don't get good technical support in a pre-sale situation, then you've got a problem because it is never going to get any better than that.
Finally, in many cases, it's difficult to directly compare two competing products because they may work in different ways. You know, just as an example off the top of my head, let's say you're comparing a software-based product versus a dedicated appliance and they do similar things. How do you ensure a fair comparison in markets where different types of products are varied?
Oh, well, what you've identified is a real difficult issue for any kind of product tester. And the thing that you have to do is you have to say, here is how I am going to use this product, and here is what I want to do with that product. And then you say, you lay out your goals, and then from there, you say, well, does this product meet my goals? Now, when I test products for a magazine, I create essentially a hypothetical enterprise. I say, well, you know, this company has these many employees, and it's doing this in this environment and this kind of network and that sort of stuff. And, you know, then we just say, we don't really care whether, you know, the product was designed for a small business or a large business. Does it meet our needs? Now, sometimes you have a problem where a small business product will get lumped in with a large business product. You'll get an all-in-one product versus the dedicated product, and they won't come off very well against each other. But what you have to say is, you know, here's my requirement set. So you're not really testing products. You're testing the appropriateness of products in your environment or whether the products are going to meet your requirements. No such thing as a good anti-spam solution or a bad anti-spam solution. There are only anti-spam solutions that meet your needs, as opposed to products that don't.
Joel Snyder with Opus One and Information Security Magazine. Thank you for joining us on Security Wire Weekly.
Great to be here.
Finally this week, a judge rules that consumer data theft doesn't necessarily result in pain and suffering. According to a report from CNetNews.com, Wells Fargo Bank had customer data stolen 18 months ago when thieves took computers from a third-party data broker that Wells Fargo hired to handle the information. Two Wells Fargo customers then filed a class action suit against the bank, claiming it was liable for emotional distress. However, a judge recently ruled in favor of Wells Fargo because the stolen data was never used in a crime. So despite the data loss, it turned out to be a win, in one way, for Wells Fargo. And that is Security Wire Weekly from SearchSecurity.com. The latest corporate security news is always available as it breaks on our news page at SearchSecurity.com/news. And don't forget you can find more of our podcasts at SearchSecurity.com/podcast. Thanks for joining us. I'm Eric Parizo. Stay safe out there.